And good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. We're also very pleased to have back on the show a guest who's been with us quite a lot over the years. Her name is Sandy Mason. She's with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And we do a show with her during the growing season. Starting in the spring, we go into the fall. We do these shows every month. The idea is that if you have questions about trees and shrubs or grass or flowering plants or vegetables or houseplants, anything just about that grows in the home landscape, if you're having a problem or you need some suggestions, you can call us. And we've always done this starting in March. But this year, we decided we're tired of winter. It's time for spring. And one of the sure signs of spring is when Sandy shows up. So we just thought, well, okay, we're going to go a month early. That's all there is to it. We're tired of winter. It's going to be spring. Sandy's here. Now, we're hoping that we'll also hear from some folks. Maybe if you're thinking, if you have had a particular problem last season and you would just want to make sure you avoid it and you're not exactly sure what to do, of course, we can advise about that. You're thinking about plants and maybe you'd like to have a little advice on particular varieties. Or, as I say, maybe you've got a houseplant sort of question. Any and all of that is great. We'd welcome your calls. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So whatever whatever's on your mind, you can give us a call. Well, it's really nice to have you back again.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm sure it's going to be – I'm sure spring is just around the corner.
So they claim.
Well,
okay, if you do as the climatologists do, and you consider winter to be December, January, and February, they say, as far as they're concerned, spring starts March 1st.
I'm cool with
so
that.
That's not. We only had about 2 weeks, so that's not so bad. And we have three callers ready
See?
To go.
And
there is an event that we do want to talk about. So people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, keep listening here because it's pretty cool. And it's coming up here actually about a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Right? February 24th.
Right. But we'll talk more about that later. We'll start out with Aurora. Line number four right here. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I guess I started spring by starting to do my spring cleaning. I figured spring was too nice to do cleaning, so I'm doing it now.
Good plan.
And I do have a question, but I wanted to tell you that I had some successes and my amaryllis bloom, but not in time for Christmas. My poinsettia is still alive, and I can't cut it like I'm supposed to, aren't I? Supposed to cut it back now?
Is it still blooming?
It's somewhat. You know,
it
doesn't look as great as it did, but that it's alive, I think, is quite an accomplishment. I'm just counting my accomplishments. And one of the things in all my readings, I found a good rule of thumb is to just evenly moist the plants. I mean, the poinsettia.
On the poinsettia. Mm-hmm.
What?
Actually, you're right. Actually, for a lot of the plants, that's what we like. And probably more people kill houseplants by just loving them to death by overwatering them. And that's probably one of the big things is overwatering.
In all my readings, that's what I found out. And my primrose that I got as a gift is still alive.
Oh, great.
Well, you know, I give it about an inch of water every morning and I spray it. And it's still alive. It looks real good. It isn't blooming now, but it had. And that's another accomplishment because I haven't been able to keep them till I can put them out.
Right.
What I wanted to ask you was, what is the best African violet? I'm going to try violets. What is the best African violet to grow?
Wow. I'm not. You know, so much of that is personal preference.
I want it to grow.
Okay. You might try, there's actually a series called the Optimara series.
Yeah.
And they're different colors, but that's one. It's a patented name. And that's actually really, it's fairly easy to find, and it's a good one. I think it's one that you won't have quite as much trouble with that maybe you had with some of the other ones. I think that, you know, of course, the biggest thing to remember is, you know, they like bright light, but they don't like direct light. But there's certainly another one of those that likes to be kept evenly moist. They don't like drying out over long periods of time. And so just getting down that watering and make sure it's getting plenty of light. That's real important too. So I think you'll find that. But realize all African violets, to some extent, are always going to go through that kind of a period where they just don't bloom much. They all go through this sort of a rest period. So don't expect them to have flowers on them all the time. But that should be a good series to look for.
Thank you much. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. The guest this morning here on Focus 580 is Sandy Mason, and she is going to be with us now every month from now and through the fall for a monthly show talking about lawn and garden care, things that grow around the home landscape. Questions are welcome. All you need to do is call us here at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Clifton is the next caller here, line number one. Hello. Yeah,
good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
And I'm wondering about a couple of plants from a couple of countries of my heritage. Can I grow, we're a little bit north of Champaign, about 60 miles as a crow flies. One of them is heather from Scotland. The other is edelweiss from the mountainsides in Germany.
Yeah, boy.
Will they grow and just leave them outdoors?
Kind of tough. They're real tough. Actually, you can often find heather as a potted plant that you can purchase and sort of use it like you would a poinsettia or something, bring it in the house and enjoy it that way. But, you know, both of those, one of the real problems that they need really, really, you know, they're more in mountainous areas where they have great drainage and, you know, in more rocky soils, that kind of thing. Our soils are almost too wet for them in a lot of respects. So it would be, we have one of our master gardeners actually sort of built this heather and heath garden. So it can be done, but it does take a lot of effort. You have to have lots of rocks. They like an acidic soil, those kinds of things. So you'd have to have a very specialized area to do this. So it could be done, but it's going to take some effort.
Well,
so,
ashes, will that make it acid? Ashes, are they on the acid side?
No, actually, they go the other way. They actually make it more alkaline. So you don't want to use wood ashes. They'll actually go the other way. Usually sulfur is what we use to actually make the soil more acidic. But probably the biggest thing is going to be having those rocks, lots and lots of rocks. So almost this rock garden area in order, you know, a raised area, rock garden, those kind of things you're going to have to keep in mind to actually try and grow something like that.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at a heather plant right now.
They're pretty, aren't they? Just beautiful.
Yeah.
One
time I did plant about, I think I had must have planted about six edelweisses out in the garden, and they gradually, one by one, left after 5 or 6 years, they're all gone. I think I'm going to try them again.
Again, I'd really, you know, do some preparation on the area, and I think, you know, you could certainly try it.
Try and make it acid?
Well, you need an acidic soil, but I think the biggest thing is just lots of rocks. You're really going to have to think about a very rocky area.
Well, such a spot.
Our soils are too good, in other words. Our soils are just too good. We have way too much organic matter, that kind of thing, for these types of plants that are native to more arid, sort of rocky areas. So.
Well, I do have my garden spot here is it drains. It holds the moisture good, but then at the same time, it drains fast. I mean, it's got good drainage, at least I think it has. Oh, I made one other big goof here. last fall, I was digging up some of my lilies, and I must have had 200 bulbs, and I turned around and put them back, about 100 of them I put back in the soil, but I got about another 100 sitting out here in the garage. They sit out there with no heat or anything all winter. Is there any chance that those would grow?
If they've frozen, they're probably not any good anymore, to be honest with you. You'll find out real quick. If you grab one of them and it feels squishy or it feels just completely like air, like there's nothing in there, you'll find out real quick. You know, obviously, they should feel nice and firm. And if they don't feel that way, then I'd stick them on the compost pile.
Well, I've got quite a row of lilies as it is. Yeah. In other words, I probably got 250 or 300 out here now.
Sounds like you got plenty already.
I was trying to make the row go clear to the cornfield out here in the back of my house, and I live at the edge of a village at Clifton. Well, I don't think I got anything else for the morning, Sandy. Thank you for coming in this year.
Sure. Hey, thank you.
And you keep smiling. You look better when you smile.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Don't we all?
Okay. Let's go on here to another caller. This is Eureka, and it's line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
There's a spring horticulture show, and I wonder if Sandy knows when it's going to be this year.
The mom? Are you talking about the Moms Day, the U of I Moms Day show? Or
I think so. It's down on South Campus, and it's every year. It's about April.
Yeah, boy, I don't have a calendar in front of me.
That's all right. I'll hear you next time.
It is in April. You're absolutely right. It's in April. It seems like it's like the third weekend is what I'm thinking. But it is the same weekend as the University of Illinois has its Moms Day activities, so it is that same weekend. But at any rate, I'm sure next month when I come on, I can give you that exact date. But I'm sorry I didn't bring that with me.
That'll be fine. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Right, that's always a great show. It's a great way to get some ideas about garden design and buy a few plants. And
sure,
it's
very good. Let's go to Chicago and line number three for the next caller. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have two problems. If you'll put up with me. I have a jade plant, and it grows in all directions, sort of a crazy thing. And it gets so heavy, it looks like the parts are going to fall off.
Mm-hmm.
Can I replant those?
Sure.
What's
actually,
the trick on that?
Yeah, actually, jade plants are one of those plants. Even I have a very large one, a very old one.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, you can just hack those things back. It's just amazing. How much you can prune those back, and they will still send out these new little shoots and branches. And I've actually taken major branches that I've cut off,
yes,
and then just stuck them in soil
again,
inside, just stuck them in a pot inside, and those crazy things go ahead and root. And it's actually an amazing plant. You can do all kinds of abusive things to it, and it comes back. Just amazing.
You don't have to put them in water to root
them
or anything.
No, just stick them in the soil. Yep,
uh-huh.
yep.
All right.
Real easy.
And here's the other thing. I acquired a General Electric plant light. That's a fluorescent tube. Are there any do's and don'ts with those? Can you do damage to a plant or otherwise?
So this is just the fluorescent tube?
Yes.
Kind of thing, but it's supposed to be a grow light?
Yes.
There really isn't any problem with those. The nice thing, of course, about fluorescent lights is they don't give off the heat like you get with incandescent. So you can actually get them fairly close to the plant and not have to worry about burning the plant. Usually we say within 6 to 8 inches of the plant if you're really trying to get optimum growth. So you can actually get them fairly close to the plant without having to worry about that. But probably the big thing is that don't leave it on 24 hours. That's what a lot of people end up doing, and that's really not necessary. 16 hours is absolutely plenty.
Yes, I face north, so I don't get any sun.
Yeah. So that's a good way to take care of that.
The jade would like that?
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. How often do you water a jade?
A jade? Yeah, actually, usually for those you really want, because they're real succulent like that, and that's true of a lot of the succulent plants, is to let them dry down in between waterings.
Uh-huh.
And actually, they'll take quite a bit of drought before they actually cause a lot of problems anyway. So let the soil just really go dry and then water them.
Really dry. What, like a week or 2 weeks would that be?
Probably, you know, certainly depends on the humidity in your home and that kind of thing. But I would say you could easily go 2 weeks on most of the jades and not have any problems. But you'll see on jades, they'll start to crinkle up, the leaves will actually crinkle, and that's when you know that they really need some water.
A lot of water or just a little bit?
When you water, actually, that's true of all plants, is when you water them, just water thoroughly.
Sure.
Just really drench the soil, but again, you should have them in a pot where the water will come out the bottom,
uh-huh,
so they're not actually sitting in water. But every time you water, just water thoroughly, and that's your best bet.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
right,
thanks
bye-bye
for the call. Well, our director, Brian Wagner, is on the case here and looked up the dates for the Moms Day weekend for us. So for those people who are interested, on the U of I campus, the Moms Day weekend is April 20, 21, 22.
There
so,
you go.
And then so the plant show should happen that same
time.
And it's nice because you get, not only can you buy plants, but they do have these little demonstration gardens that the students do. And it's nice to just get different ideas and maybe see some plants that you might not be familiar with.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
There's also an activity that same weekend is called the Garden Gala, and that's going to be nice out at the Champaign County Fairgrounds. So there will be something else you can go to. You can go to the Stock Pavilion to see the U of I Hort Club, and then you can go out to the Garden Gala to get some other. They're going to have all kinds of vendors and workshops, and so there'll be all kinds of gardening things to do that weekend in April.
All right, so that's the weekend of April 20th. if your folks are interested in that. And the lines are full. Let's keep going here. We'll go next to Clay City. This is line number 4. Hello.
Yes. I'm a raised bed gardener. I like to plant my plants in raised beds and enjoy the fact that I can walk between the rows. I can mow around them, and it's a little easier to cultivate, a lot easier to handle. But I often rotate from one bed to the next different plants. I've got potatoes that I'm thinking of that I should put tomatoes in the same place, and I've got green beans in one where I had. Should I? Which would be the best rotation? Should I put those tomatoes to get the best best use out of my soil? And the next thing is, what can I do to prep that bed this time of year with something that would be good for tomatoes?
Right.
I'll hang it and let you talk about it.
Right. Okay. Usually when we think of crop rotation in the vegetable garden like that, is usually we think of families, actually rotating through different families. And potatoes and tomatoes are actually in the same family, so normally we wouldn't want to follow one from the other. And so generally we're looking at either the tomato-potato family, and peppers are also in that family. There's certainly the onion family, onions, garlics, all those kind of plants. The cole crop, so things like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and all that kind of stuff would be another family. And then certainly the beans and peas, the legumes types of. So usually we think of families when we start crop rotating. So I probably wouldn't follow potatoes and tomatoes or have those actually in the same plot. And that's mainly for disease problems and insect problems, those kinds of things. So you might think about actually, you know, switching to maybe, you know, go ahead and put your green beans in that area and maybe put tomatoes where the beans were or something. So I think I do a little crop rotation that way. As far as bed preparation, you know, of course, anytime you can add organic matter, that's always great. You know, really the majority by far of our vegetable plants like that extra organic matter. And so anytime you can get out there and add some compost or whatever you might have, well-rotted manure, whatever you have out there, this is a great time to go ahead and do that. Probably the worst part, or the worst thing this time of year, of course, is that the soils are so darn wet, and so sometimes it's really tough to get out there to do a lot of bed preparation, because you never, 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 never want to work the soil when it's too wet, because you'll do it once, and then you'll never do it again, because you just form these giant clods that you fight all season long. So that's probably the big thing, is that, and certainly a lot of times you can just put the compost actually on the top surface of the soil, maybe even this time of year, and then work it in later. So okay. Those are some good.
We had a place where in our garden where 2 years ago we had tomatoes growing, and we skipped last year for this very reason, this idea that you shouldn't plant tomatoes in the same place year after year. Mm-hmm. That just makes it more likely that you might have disease problems.
Right.
And I'm wondering now, since we skipped a year, do you think that be okay to go in there and try to plant tomatoes in the same place?
Yeah, you know, ideally, you know, we'd probably like to see a 3-year rotation where you'd actually wait a couple years.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes if you have a small garden or you don't really have those kind of options, so it's, you know, ideally it'd be nice if you'd wait a couple years, but sometimes we can't always do that, so.
All right. Now I just have to put up some big iron bars
big
to keep the
bars.
Animals away. So I'll get a couple
you
tomatoes.
Have animal problems.
Oh,
right?
It's just terrible. It's terrible. They eat all the, you know, they eat it before it even gets ripe. You wouldn't even get a chance to go out there and eat it. They're eating green tomatoes and anything that can be consumed.
You need a big dog.
I guess. And then the dog, we just have to chain the dog to the tomato plant. It'd have to be there 24 hours a day. And the dog probably would get tired of that. Let's go on. Line number 1 is...
Are you through
next,
venting?
Yes, I think so. I may have to vent a little bit more later. That's just the kind of guy I am. But we'll go to Oakwood, line 1. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I have some clematis vines that I have been tempted to move. They were planted next to an arborvita, which has since enlarged, and so they now come up in the spring, and then they usually blossom a few blossoms, and then they get pretty much shaded the rest of the year, and so I thought about digging them up and putting them in a more sunny place that they would get sun most of the summer. When is a good time to do that, or a bad time, or so forth?
Actually, you can do it in the spring. That shouldn't be a problem at all. I'd probably wait a little bit later than now, obviously, but probably more like April, somewhere in there, when you first start seeing a few shoots coming up, and then I would go ahead and move them then.
Okay.
But I think you're right. It's probably a good idea. They don't really like a whole lot of competition like that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And to next line number 2, and this is in Champaign. Hello.
Oh, good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, I've got a string of pearls plant, and I'd like to know how to make a whole lot of them. Do I put the little pearls in water, or can I put it right in soil, or what?
Yeah, actually, you can just lay one of the little, just have a little section of the little pearls and just lay it on the soil, top surface of the soil, and you'll start getting some more.
Easier.
Yeah, they're really neat plants, aren't they? Kind of an oddity, kind of a something a little different. But
yeah, it took a long time to find one.
Yeah, they're not. They used to be really popular for a while, and I don't see them quite so much anymore, but fairly easy to propagate.
Okay, then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. Thank you. And on to Urbana, line three.
Yes, I've been trying for several years to grow Dutchman's britches, and they sort of hang on kind of weakly, but they don't grow to a big clump and rarely get a flower. Quite often I'll see a little tiny new plant, just about one leaf come up some distance away. But what do I do to encourage the growth of these plants?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure exactly where you have, but if you look at where they are natively, you know, certainly you can find them in the forested areas in this, certainly in our area, Allerton Park, and some of those, a lot of places you can find Dutch's breeches, and they're just thick.
I have them in a wooded area along with a lot of other wildflowers that are just proliferating,
mm-hmm.
but the Dutchman's breeches don't.
Hmm. I'm not sure why. Where did you get the plants?
Locally from someone on a farm nearby.
Mm-hmm. It might be just this, I don't know how big the plants were at the time. It might be, you know, when they were transplanted, it might be just a time thing. Because usually if you have those same kind of, you know, lots of organic matter, you know, shredded leaves on top of them, you know, anything that you can sort of mimic what they'd get in a forested situation where they get moist soils, those kind of things, usually they're actually quite prolific normally.
Well,
so I wonder about the plants just a little bit, because it seems like if all the other plants are doing well, the conditions should probably be right for them.
They were quite large plants when I put them, and they would come up, but not very strongly, and it's keep getting weaker. And
mm-hmm. It's not.
It is a wooded area, just a corner of my yard, and you know, the leaves fall down, and
And it's not too wet right there.
No,
because normally you'd find them on more of the, you know, slopes and areas where it's up a little higher. In forested areas. I'm not sure what else to tell you beyond that. You might try, you know, sometimes I actually just move things. If they've been there for several years and nothing's happening, sometimes I wonder if they just don't need to be moved to another spot. They just don't like that spot. Or you might try some more plants in a different spot. That might be even a better thing.
Okay.
So
thanks.
Beyond that, I'm not sure what else.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And we're getting the lines freed up here. If you tried to call and got a busy signal, you try again. We have plenty of time to take calls. Our guest this morning, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And now, every month from now through the fall, she'll be here, and we'll do this show on lawn and garden care. So if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a minute here to talk about the program that's coming up on the 24th.
Sure. The Champaign County Master Gardeners for the last couple of years have tried to do these, you know, major events, a gardening event. And last year we had Roger Swain came in, which I know a lot of people probably know him from Victory Garden and as many books that he wrote. Well, this year we have on Saturday, February 24th, this is going to be at the Park Inn and Conference Center in Urbana. We're going to have actually a wonderful full day event of lots of different gardening programs on just about anything you can think of. But our keynote speaker is Barbara Damrosch, who's actually been around in the gardening community for a very, very long time. I don't think she'd mind that I said that, although she's not that old, but she's been around for a long time, has lots of experience. She wrote, it was one of the first books I think I ever even knew about in gardening called Theme Gardens, and that's been around for a long time. She has a new one that's coming out in May called Theme Gardens 2. So it really is a wonderful time for people to actually meet Barbara Damrosch. She's also going to be doing a book signing at that time. She also wrote another book called The Garden Primer for people that are just sort of getting into gardening. She's also married to Elliot Coleman, and if anybody's a vegetable gardener, they may recognize that name. Elliot Coleman's actually written in several books on getting produce, fresh produce from your garden year-round. And you have to keep in mind that Barbara and Elliot live in Maine. And if they can get growing vegetables fresh year produce round, year round in May,
they must
Maine,
know something special.
Yeah, then I'd say we have no excuses here in Illinois. If they can do that in Maine, where they have, I think, a month of summer or something up there. But, you know, it's not, you know, it's cold up there. So this is actually, so this February 24th, people can enjoy Barbara as the keynote speaker. She's also going to be doing a program, not just on talking about ornamentals, but she's also going to be talking about fresh food from the garden year round. So, you know, maybe that's some of that stuff, you know, living with a guy like Elliot that she's picked up over the years. Also, we're going to have some wonderful programs on everything from new perennials. People are always wondering about new plants that are out there. Shade gardening. People always have problems with that. Some healthy garden practices. This is kind of a new program that we've put together on, you know, everything from, you know, how do you take care of your back so you have back aches the next day when you're doing gardening? How do you take care of your skin so you don't end up with poison ivy or sunburn, those kinds of things. So I think people will enjoy that program. And also some fun things, of course, on ornamental grasses. Garden design is also another big thing, of course, this time of year. We have another author, Janet Makunovich. She's from Michigan. She's written a book called Simple Successful Garden Design. She also has a business up in Michigan called Perennial Favorites. And she's going to be doing a program on garden design, obviously. Also, some things on plant multiplication. You know, how do you get more plants? People are always wondering, what do I do now? How do I get more plants? Some uncommonly good trees is another one. Low-maintenance landscaping. We always have questions, you know, how do I not spend quite so much time on my landscape? So I think this is going to be a wonderful program that people can really get charged up about the growing season. So it's going to be Saturday, February 24th at the Park Inn in Urbana. It runs 8:30 to 5. If people want to register, because you do need to pre-register ahead of time, they can call our office, and the phone is 217-333-7672. Okay. So I think it'd be a great opportunity for people to meet some great people and get some wonderful ideas for the year.
Now, if you get a session on no maintenance landscaping,
the
one I'm coming
Notice
to.
Notice I said low.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
All right. Also, we're going to have Barbara Damrosch on Focus 5.
Oh, that's right.
In advance of the event. So people will have the opportunity to talk with her, and then maybe they'll get them excited about actually attending. Okay. And this is Saturday the 24th.
Yeah, February 24th.
Just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Questions here? Welcome as we talk with Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. You have questions about things that grow in the home landscape or indoor plants. We can do that too. 333-WILL or 9455 and toll free 800-222-WILL. Here's a caller in Homer, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I was wondering if Sandy had any advice for what we can do about the coming Japanese beetle invasion this summer.
You know, as soon as I heard the call was from Homer, somehow I knew this was going to be the question. Why is that? Yeah, boy. I wish I had some good solutions for you. I really do, because certainly even the master gardeners out at the Idea Garden on campus have been struggling with this for the last couple of years as Japanese beetle populations have risen. I unfortunately, all I can tell you is that the same things we've said before. There isn't anything brand new. One thing they have found is those first ones that come in, those first Japanese beetles that come in, if you can control those, it seems to lessen the problems later. So there is something about Japanese beetles. As you notice, they always tend to congregate together on the same plants. There's something about them that attracts other Japanese beetles. So controlling those first ones, very important. So you have to really kind of keep scouting your garden, your yard. And generally, of course, this is in the summertime. We're not going to see these guys in the spring. They generally come later in the summer. So that's real important. And how you do that, of course, if it's on a big tree, that gets obviously more difficult. But for some plants, individual plants, you can use the pesticide 7 is somewhat effective for them. You do have to keep in mind that 7 is a pesticide that is non-selective. It'll kill all the good guys as well as, you know, bees and, you know, everything else. So you have to be very selective on how you use it and use it properly. But it can be used appropriately on certain plants at certain times. So also picking them off, I mean, I know that's no fun, can't do that on big trees, that kind of thing. So I wish I had a good solution for you, but unfortunately, there isn't anything brand new when it comes to Japanese beetle control.
Okay.
So,
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I think last year, and I'm sure that they've been around, but I think, and I live in Urbana near the high school, and I think last year was the first time that I remember seeing them, mm-hmm. and not that I went looking for them, but I just happened to notice
right.
one, and that I don't know, you know, if they'd just been lurking, hiding, and this was the first time one actually got out into the open, and I just noticed it. But I'm sure that it's the kind of thing that over time, more and more, we're just going to
right.
see them. And if you have never seen one in your garden, maybe sooner or later, the day's going to come when they're going to be there.
Right, right. And we certainly, over the last couple of years, we've seen sort of an insurgence, certainly at the Idea Garden, you know, there in Urbana. You know, we started seeing them a couple of years ago. They weren't horrible a couple of years ago, but the last year, they were horrible and really, really took care of a lot of the plants. There's always certain plants they love to pick on. They love to pick on roses. They love to pick on grapes, raspberries. Unfortunately, there's probably about 350 different plants that they like to pick on. So it gets really tough. I think the bottom line is, you know, try to encourage people. I know it doesn't say much when you have to watch your plants being eaten like that, but generally it's not life-threatening for the plant because most of the time they're picking on shrubby types of plants, woody plants that normally can come out of it, and they do are generally here for a month or so. So they're not here for a long period of time. So there's a little bit of good news, maybe not a whole lot of good news, but a little bit of good news with Japanese beetle problems. But it's really a tough thing, and maybe eventually we'll probably have some more some better solutions. But we're just now seeing them in our area. I live in Piatt County, and I saw one last year in my garden, and that was the first time I'd ever seen one. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping they stay over here.
We're going to round a bunch up and take over to your house.
I always want to wash my car every time I leave Champaign County to make sure I don't take them into Piatt.
We're now just almost midpoint of February. Once we get into March, we certainly should start getting some, at least a little bit warmer days when people mm-hmm. might want. If you do have a nice day and it's sort of sunny and I don't know what sort of temperatures we might expect, 50s or something like that, not bad. You want to get out there. Maybe one of the first things you might think about doing is pruning things mm-hmm. that you thought about last year. And, of course, the advice is, well, you really don't want to do too much heavy pruning in the fall. You want right. to wait for the springtime. Once we get into March, is it okay to get out there and start doing serious pruning on trees and shrubs, or is that even too soon?
No, actually, you can do actually even the end of February. You can actually, if we get some nice, halfway decent days where you feel like getting out, certainly the end of February into March, you can do a lot of pruning, and that actually is a good time to do it for many of the plants. Probably the only things we wouldn't want to prune are anything, any of the like flowering shrubs or flowering trees that bloom very early in the season. So things like lilac and magnolia and forsythia. So usually the rule of thumb, if it blooms before mid-June, then it probably already has its flower buds on it right now. So if you do a lot of pruning, you're going to be taking off the flower buds. It's not going to kill the plant, but you're going to lose the flower. So you kind of have to keep that in mind on when you're doing your pruning. Also, for a lot of the fruit trees, so things like apple trees, this is a great time to go out there and start pruning on those, because generally those have to be pruned every single year. Otherwise, they kind of get out of control. You might also find it maybe a little bit later in the season, not quite so cold right now, but certainly into March, a lot of the shrubs you might find, maybe you have a privet hedge or something like that you really want to cut down and let it come back. This is a good time to sort of think about that. So this, you're absolutely right. This is a good time to sort of evaluate how much pruning you can do, and maybe take care of some of those problems that you've had in the past.
Mm-hmm. Any sort of general advice on how to do that? I'm sure somebody who's maybe experienced would perhaps look at a plant yeah. right away. They'd say, okay, I want to cut this over here, and I'm going to cut this right. over here. And but other than the fact that shape is important, maybe from an aesthetic sense, and
right.
crossing branches are sort of a problem, how even do you think about approaching pruning?
Yeah, it's always tough because, you know, you look at the pruning books and they always have these wonderful pictures. And, of course, your plants never look like the pruning books. And so I think it really is one of those things where you have to just know the basics, as you said, looking at shape, looking at crossing branches, anything that's obviously dead, any branches that are obviously going into the center. Those are always good ones to just remove. Certainly when we're looking at trees, one of the things you need to look at is poor branch angles. So if the branch angle is really narrow, where it looks like it's just really stuck together and really narrow and there's not much space between the branches, especially if the branches look like they're equal size, it's time to prune, get one of those out of there, because those very narrow branch angles are very weak, and so those tend to be the ones that fall apart. So you look at those kinds of things. And it is, I think it really is one of those things, you know the basics, and then you just go out and you just do it. And you start cutting on them. And it's important to step back once in a while, because I know everybody's a little nervous at first, and, you know, you don't want to cut anything. And then there's kind of this frenzy. It's sort of like the first auction you ever go to. You know, you're kind of nervous when the first auction you go to. And then you kind of get into this frenzy, and, you know, and you sort of have to step back once in a while, because you can get a little carried away cutting too much. So generally what we'd like to do on trees especially is that take no more than a third of the tree at any one time. So if you really have like a big apple tree or something, you're really trying to bring it down size, or another kind of tree, you might want to really think about, okay, this year I'm going to prune out this, this, and this. Next year I'll prune out this, this, and this. So you might actually have a 2 or 3 year plan on a particular tree, but you don't really want to take it all out at the same time, because it really can cause some problems. Also on trees, of course, is just to really think about, I always encourage people, if you have to get up on a ladder to prune them, it's probably time to get a professional to do it. You know, none of us bounce very well like we used to when we were kids. You know, I remember you used to fall out of trees all the time when you were a little kid and you did okay. None of us do that so well anymore. So it's real important that if you really have to get up, if you have to climb into the tree or get on a ladder or whatever, it's time for somebody else to do it. So do your pruning standing on the ground. And a lot of the pruning actually can be done on really thinking about those young trees, you know, and really shaping them early. That's probably the big thing, is that I know when I first got, you know, you get a tree and you want it to grow, and you know, you don't want to cut anything off because you want this tree to get bigger. Well, realize that you're shaping its future, and so it's important to really evaluate the tree each year. Even if it's a new tree, you may find that there's a few branches you need to take off, or you need to limit up or something like that. So I think it's one of those things. It's a good time to wander around your garden and your yard and really start to evaluate a lot of the plants that you might have out there.
I think, too, that some folks still seem to want to do something to the cut surface.
Right. You're right.
And the advice is, no, you don't have to do that.
No, no, no. Even though they, you know, they still sell these pruning paints and, you know, these black tarry stuff and all that stuff, they really have found that that stuff doesn't help. And in some cases, actually hinders regrowth of that area. And so they really found that your best bet is to make sure you use sharp tools. Don't leave any stubs, any branch stubs. You know, do it appropriately. Those things are the things that are important. Keep the tree healthy just by, you know, those kind of practices. And that's the best bet. The tree will do what it needs to do. And so you don't really have to do any of that pruning paint stuff. Plus, it didn't look very good anyway.
Yeah. And how important is it with your tools if you're particularly going from one plant to another, or at least for parts of one plant to parts of the same plant, to clean? So what I've heard is you should always, like, dip them in bleach or something, because you don't want to actually take disease from one plant and inoculate another plant with it, and that you can't actually do that this way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And for a lot of the diseases, especially you get into some of the fruit trees, roses also, you can really create a lot of havoc by inoculating. You're absolutely right, taking the disease organism from one plant to the next. So as ideally, the nice thing would be to actually stick your tools either in bleach or alcohol in between every cut, so you're not actually transferring it even on the same plant, which certainly can be done. Now, are we all going to do that? Well, probably not. But if it's obviously has some dead branches, you're a little bit concerned that maybe there might be some disease problems, then it would be very important to make sure that you do sterilize those tools in between each cut. And not just each plant, but each cut. I like to use alcohol. I found out real quick that using bleach works, but I found out real quick that you better make sure you have some really old clothes on, because the little you get these little polka dots all over your clothes. And I don't know why I didn't think about it at the time, but, you know, it was one of those things. So you end up having those. But so alcohol actually works out very well, but doesn't damage your clothes quite as much.
Well, not everyone wears their formals when they garden like you do.
Me. You know how I am.
Well, I know. That's the kind of, you know, when you go, I know you're very serious when you get out there and being well, you know.
Yeah.
You never know who might stop by.
Well coiffed. Yes, you're absolutely right. And also, of course, after you do all this, is that make sure you oil your tools, because they will rust them. I mean, it really creates a lot of havoc for your pruners and stuff, too. So make sure you oil them right afterwards.
Okay, we have a caller here, and would certainly be happy to take other calls. We have about 10 minutes left. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. This is the first this year of our series on lawn and garden care, and we'll be doing it every month with Sandy through the fall. Also, by the way, if you're interested in gardening, there's a program that we have on WILL-TV. It's on every week. It's called Illinois Gardener, and it's on Thursday nights at 7. And there is, on that show, the possibility to call in. They have a rotating series of guests, people from the U of I and people who work in various garden shops and landscaping businesses in the area. So there are different people on all the time. Sandy's on the show sometimes too. So it's another place that if you have a problem and you don't know what to do with it, you can call and ask your questions. Well, we'll get back to the phones here. Bradley is next caller on our line number 4. Hello.
Yes. I'm going to try some ornamental grasses along the back fence in my yard, and I have had no experience. I'm sending for some seeds, some Miscanthus sinensis new hybrids. I don't know how many, or would you plant those like grass? Can I start them inside? A packet is 100 seeds, and I may know more after I receive them. But
right. Right, right. I think I would probably start them indoors. You certainly wouldn't have to. I think I would probably start them indoors simply because I think you have a little bit better control. Certainly could go ahead and plant them outside, but I'd definitely wait till it warms up a little bit. We're probably talking the end of April or something, or mid-April, probably before you plant them outside. So you could certainly do it either way and probably have fairly good success.
Now, how would you space those seeds? Are they like grass seeds, or one in a pot, or
these are certainly grasses. I think if I was starting them indoors, I'd probably put a couple in a pot, two or three in a pot, just to see what happens.
Yeah,
and that's fine. I have a feeling if you do it outside, you're going to end up with this real thicket of grass, and maybe that's the look you're going for.
I don't know.
Because a lot of times we use ornamental grasses as more like individual clumps, because that's
right.
kind of the
I'm
look we're going
individual
for.
Individual clumps, but would one seed make a clump?
Eventually, it would. It's going to take longer. I'd probably put several together just to make it look better in the beginning.
Several.
Right. To make it look better in the beginning. You could always do it outside and sort of broadcast it, and then just go through and just hoe out the ones that you don't want.
Right. Okay, well, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And to another caller here, this is Urbana and line 1. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
My question concerns my front lawn. I had to have my sewer line replaced, and I've got a heck of a mess out there now. When they finally get around to spreading it all out, I'll have a mixture of soil and sand and clay. And
so would I be
better off? I think I'll go ahead and till it and I'd be better off to have one of these trucks full of topsoil delivered and put that on top first, or have the pH checked, or just how do I go about that?
So they really brought up a lot of clay from the subsurface.
Yeah,
is that the idea?
He said there's that and a vein of sand underneath there, too. A lot of sand in it, too.
Boy, that's tough. Because if you bring topsoil in, you certainly could do that. You'd still want to probably mix it together, till it or something like that. And that might be one way to go. I think obviously then you have to look at the drainage by adding that extra soil. What's it going to do to the drainage of the rest of the yard? Because obviously you don't want it heading towards your house or anything like that. So you kind of have to reevaluate that a little bit. So if you can get away with adding some soil. Yeah, or certainly organic, you can get compost delivered or something like that even to add to it. I think that would help, too. And I think I would probably, if there's certain clods or certain areas where it's obviously lots of clay, I think I would probably get that out of there and stick it on the compost pile or something like that and not even work it in. I don't know if you still have piles, but some of that I would probably just take off, period.
What kind of soil or seed mixture would I be looking at?
Is this full sun or?
Mostly, I've got a tree there about half the day. You got full sun.
Mm-hmm. Usually, we're looking at a Kentucky bluegrass and a perennial ryegrass mixes is usually what we go with. And you just want to get a good mix that has a couple different cultivars of bluegrass and a couple different cultivars of ryegrass, so that you don't have just one type of seed. So, and that's most of the mixes out there are like that. So just get a good quality seed and go with that.
Okay.
So that's usually fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. And a couple of years ago, I had an area that it was sort of the same deal, that it had been disturbed because some work had been done around the foundation of the house, and there was an area that I wanted to have grass, and so I got some grass seed, and I think it was one that said it was for heavy trafficked area, something like that, and I planted it there, and it was relatively early and watered it, and it did great, and it really flourished until it came to that part of the year where it got really hot and really dry, and most of it died.
Oh, really?
And I was thinking now, this must be that I really should have a different variety, and maybe what I should be thinking about is drought tolerance instead, you know, because I don't want something that's going to be really lush and great and sort of in the early part of the summer and then half of it dies away.
Right. Yeah, a lot of times you really have to look at those, you know, mixes, because sometimes they'll put stuff in there like annual ryegrass, which is one of those that looks great the first of the season and actually can really look pretty good for a while. It's pretty good for as a temporary, but once it starts to get hot, it just fades away and you don't see too much of it. So it's not a very good long-term grass. So sometimes you have to really look at what gets put in some of the mixes. Also, there's a lot of people looking at tall fescue, which if you think back, it was used for meadows, you know, pastures and stuff. But now they have these turf type tall fescues where the leaf blade is much narrower, and it's pretty nice looking grass. But good for low maintenance areas in the sense that they're not going to be watered on a regular basis, they're not going to be fertilized on a regular basis. So maybe people need to look at things like tall fescue. I have one part of my yard is in tall fescue, and boy, that thing just keeps growing and. You can definitely tell that when the drought hits July and August, it looks much better than the Kentucky bluegrass areas in my lawn.
Let's go real quick. One more. Urbana, line one. Hello.
I just wanted to say that who can say that picking Japanese beetles off your plants is not fun? I think it's great fun. You have a thingy of soapy water, and you flick them in. And it's a challenge because there are certain ways that you can move that make them pull in and drop to the ground.
Right. Or sometimes they'll fly away. We found that actually it's better if you can do it early in the morning when they're still kind of sleepy and cold. They seem to drop in better.
Well, I feel great satisfaction in doing these things. I have to say that it takes out a lot of frustration.
good therapy. I like that attitude.
I also wanted to say that it would be nice sometime if you could do a program that would include suggestions for plants that are frost tolerant, that hang around toward the end of the season. It's nice to have plants that don't get zapped when the first hint of frost comes along.
You're absolutely right.
Thanks.
Well,
thanks for the suggestion.
Well, there. We will stop for this month with the promise that Sandy will be back next month, and we'll do it every month through the fall here on Focus 580. Also, of course, you can look for her and other garden experts on the program Illinois Gardener on WILL-TV Thursday nights at 7. And then coming up on Saturday, February 24th, your Garden Day.
Garden Day. And if people want to give us a call at 217-333-7672, we'd be glad to send them a registration form for that.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Glad to have
you
here.
It was fun.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.